And from I didn't realize this until I was reading through this, that actually one of the pieces that was designated in 1942 as well was by the province, and it was a park dedication. It was an order in council for park purposes. That was, I think, it's lot 141, which is west of this block here, so and south of where the sort of transition on the west side from the campus, west portion of the campus and the developed portion of the Burning Mountain Park sort of aligned, and it was south of that. That area, Gullardy Way, transitions through there now and part of the Ring Road, and then the majority of it has become the Trans Mountain Tank Farm,
and,
which is now owned by Kinder Morgan.
Prior to 1952 and 1953, you're saying that the province had set it aside as
yes. Land? So when Richard Bolton enacted his bylaw in 1942, apparently at that time, I'm pretty sure it was that time that the province did an order in council to designate as park this district lot 141, which the province owned. And so, but later, when the Trans Mountain Pipeline Project came on the scene, somehow or other, they seem to have reversed that, and we're not quite sure how that happened, but the majority of that site is now the tank farm.
Right.
There.
And actually, I think they did kind of an exchange out of the Barnett Mountain Park, because this little square here went to Trans Mountain, and it originally was in the Burnaby Mountain Park, so they did...
Are you sure it's that little square? I mean, that was repealed and removed in 1952, so it might have been, but my understanding is I think it ended up, the tank farm just ended here. And it
went over here as well.
Okay. But somehow or other we got that back, I believe. Or maybe not. Maybe it went back to the province. I'm just looking up the lay of the land there and where that comes through. No, I think somehow or other that piece came back to us because...
Yeah, this is the outline of the of the tank farm right. area. And it was lot 32, 31, 30, 29 that was in... Somehow they did a transaction where they transferred land from the allowed Trans Mountain to buy a portion of the park in exchange for another bit. Sorry, I can't remember the details now. But at any rate, here we are.
Well, you know, I haven't come across that bit in what I've seen written up on this, but we do show that little rectangle. Was removed in 1952, so there was
and it was sold.
Yeah, and then above it, there were two other larger rectangles that were later removed in 1954, and probably also related to that same project. But at some point, those didn't end up in under ownership of the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Okay.
You get a piece. So I think this is
that
portion of it. And this was probably provincial because the Forest Grove area was provincial. And eventually they worked with the city on a subdivision plan for that. And we ended up with more parks being transferred to us in that area. But the other sites went to housing and co-ops and so on for that.
I wanted to ask you a bit more about the tank farm because I didn't realize that the province had actually put that in a set aside.
Yeah, and I hadn't known that either, to tell you the truth,
but,
and came across
my understanding that most of the land wasn't, of course, inside the Barnett Mountain Park, which had been dedicated in 42. But when the conservation area was delineated in 1974, the tank farm is included inside the conservation area. And the reasoning was as follows, and I'll quote, The tank farm, by virtue of its established presence and passive nature, is considered to be generally compatible with the conservation concept and therefore would not be considered prejudicial to the landmark conservation objective. And in fact, they did change the zoning to ensure that no other kind of industrial activity could occur on that land. So what my question is, what do you think of this creative way of integrating human activity with an urban forest? And did it work?
Well, that's kind of an interesting spin on the thing. I think that the key goal was to try to manage and protect land on the mountain, because as time goes on, there's more pressure to develop, and there's more pressure from infrastructure, utilities, and so on, as time goes on. And in the case of the mountain, I think that one of the things that they looked at to establish the boundary was sort of a taking sort of a contour line along the south slope and following that along and saying, you know, anything above that contour, that elevation would be part of the conservation area. Mm-hmm. And so within that area, what have we got? And, you know, we have some private lands, we have some provincial lands, we've got land owned by BC Hydro, and we've got land that's currently used or owned by petroleum companies. So not only do you have the Trans Mountain tank farm, but you have what was the Imperial Oil Petro-Canada site on the far northeast corner of the mountain, and that's also within the conservation area. So when the planners were looking at that, it's an existing use, and you know they could recommend to council that you know they recommend phasing that out. But in reality, you know, you've got petroleum being piped into that site. You've got it being stored there, and then it's piped out again, and then sent off by sea. And the reality of that being able to be removed is such a long-term, you know, process and politically is probably not going to happen, right? So they would have had to find, you know, some way to live with what was there now. So because the purpose of this was more storage, mm-hmm. that lent itself to a more passive use where they're not refining and so on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's totally possible that as time went on, as if they hadn't done a conservation area, Burn Mountain Conservation Area designation of the lands and done the rezoning to that storage use, there was then potential that there could be refinery purposes, or, you know, refinery and other types of industrial uses on those lands if they hadn't done that.
Yes.
Right? So yeah. So it was sort of a matter of having to deal with the reality of what had already been introduced and was there, and then the long-term political reality that it wasn't going to go away for quite some conceivable time. So let's control it to a storage use, and try to limit, you know, the expansion opportunities in that sense. And then you have to live with that, you know, in the context of now. Back then in the 50s, you know, there was this. There were still other private lands on the mountain, but the direction seemed to be to go. We were going to it as park, and at that time, the concept of a university hadn't happened yet, no. Right?
Well, I just wanted to get back about this idea that you can integrate human activity with an urban forest. It is a different spin on the tank farm.
When you talk about human activity, we're talking about industrial kind of human activity, right? And it's on the peripheral, it's on the fringes.
Yeah.
And so if you control it and manage it as a more passive kind of component of that industry, Then the rest of the land on the mountain can function and people can access it without having to interact with the tank form uses. You know, they may come close to the edges of it, but they don't have to transit through it and so on. So
I understand that the tank farm area was actually a fairly good deer habitat. So in some ways it worked.
In some ways it worked, yes, because you do have some sort of more meadow-like area, which we don't have a lot of on the mountain in terms of supporting, you know, some of those types of mammals.
I was going to ask, what are the challenges to managing parkland that is adjacent to or includes landowners with different priorities? I mean, there's a tank farm, there's also SFU.
Well, I was going to say, with the tank farms, you know, other than the recent, you know, expansion proposal, you know, there's always risk of fire or explosions and so on. But in a day-to-day sense, most of the conservation area that's immediately adjacent to it is fringe area between the tank farm and Burning Mountain Parkway and Killardy Way. And so that immediate sort of access of the public to those edges, we don't have any developed trails in those sections. And they provide some of that forest canopy and the understory and habitat, but they're not necessarily being promoted for recreational access and use. Okay, so you have that transition zone, and then you have the roads, and then you're getting into sort of the larger blocks of forest and habitat on the mountain, and that's where we, you know, have the trail system and have gradually been, you know, expanding it to ring the whole mountain. So on, so you get that sort of bit of buffer in between, and that direct kind of use, where you get a little bit more, you know, direct access is where the, say, the Trans Canada Trail, where we've had to actually go through the what's now Suncor site, at the time it was Petro Canada, to get down to Barnett Highway, and we've, you know, actually got easement over their land and with their, you know, agreement to route the trail through there because it's the best way down. But the sort of whole back portion, I think really they've only utilized maybe the front third of their property for their storage, you know, activities. And so the back portion is still all woods and, oh, and such. So, okay. It, you know, although it's owned by a petroleum company, the whole, you know, the land, the portion that you have the public recreation exposure to is mainly, you know, basically is similar habitat and forest cover as to the rest of the mountain. So it's not that different.